I think we've all been there. Whether you have kids, whether you have nieces or nephews, whether you remember your relationship with your own parents, we've all been in that place. A place of darkness, actually, with no light to see where you should go and what you should do. You know, just some of the faces of Steve Martin, just to see the look on his face of moments of just saying, what am I supposed to do in this circumstance? Yeah, I wasn't prepared for this. You remember when they give you a little child and you take him home and with all the hopes and dreams, and I remember that moment of taking, you know, Sierra and Javen in the car, you know, a decade ago and thinking, they're just letting me go home. I mean, there's no real parenting manual that goes with it. It's, you know, good luck to you. And as Beth and I have been going through a process of adoption, we're looking at having a newborn again in the next month and a half. And this time I know better. You know, I know, wow, this is, you go to the first couple kids, hey, you know, we got all the rules, we know exactly what's going to happen. You know, as a single person or a first married person, you tell the people who have kids what they ought to be doing. Then you have your own kids and you become a whole lot more humble. And even as Beth and I look at adoption and, you know, as it's playing out pretty strongly now, boy, I feel that. Feel those moments of just being in over your head. You got to see it not only in the parents, but also in the teenagers. At times the teenagers feel in over their head. So how do we help? How do we bring that together? Yeah, I worked as a student pastor for about 15 years, and I got a chance to work very closely with grandparents, with aunts and uncles, with parents, going through different crises, different challenges. And oftentimes I was just there walking through the difficult, embarrassing, ugly, sticky situations and trying to figure out how do we walk through this together with our kids without having that tension affect our marriage, and it does, without that tension ripping apart a family, which it can. How do you walk through that together? And so today, if you're here and you have kids and you have teenagers, we're hoping to give some real practical keys for you and unlocking that. If you don't have kids, if you're an uncle, if you're an aunt, if you're a grandparent, we're going to give you some same principles that can help you with any of the students in your life. And beyond that, a lot of the principles we're going to look at don't just apply to parenting. They apply to any kind of relationships. If you manage people, many of the principles we're going to look at will help you in your management of people, not just the kids in your life, and how to do it in such a way that brings both grace and truth to the table. You know, oftentimes we have to look to those who've gone before us to get some maps and some ideas of what to do. I heard a story of an old timer. And he had just retired. He moved into this new house. And the house was right next to the junior high school. And he enjoyed a few weeks of peace and tranquility until school was back in. And the percussion team would come out of school. And they'd always go right past his house. And he had a row of garbage cans behind his house. And as a percussion team, they'd always go by his house. And clang, giddy, clang, giddy, clang, 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 giddy, clang. And they'd be outside of his house being musical for a little bit. And then they'd walk. And every day this happened. He was getting so frustrated. This old-timer thought, well, how am I going to stop these kids from doing it? So he walked out one day as they came to begin smashing on his cans again. He says, guys, man, I'm just so appreciative of how you guys are expressing yourself. He goes, I used to express myself in that way. I was in the band, and it's good to hear you guys. You know what? I'd like to pay you guys $1 to come back tomorrow to do that again. Yeah, $1. Oh, yes. Yeah. So he gives them all $1, and they come back the next day, clangity, clang, clang. He's like, you know what? Again, this is just reminds me of my childhood. I'll give you another $1 to come back tomorrow. All right, so they come back tomorrow, clangity, clang. And he says, you know what? Man, the recession's really been hitting me. I'm only going to be able to pay you 50 cents this time. 50 cents? That's half what we got before. And I know, but, you know, the recession's been rough on me, and I'm on a fixed income. All right, we'll take the 50 cents. And so a few days go by, they come back, 50 cents again. They come back a seventh day, and he says, guys, man, I didn't get my Social Security check. I've only got a quarter. I can only pay you a quarter to come and smash and clang on my garbage cans. And the one percussionist leader turns the other and says, are you kidding? We're not going to work for a quarter. We're not ever coming back here. And he enjoyed his peace and quiet. Well, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to look behind us an old-timer, a story in the Bible, and look at some practical keys from that story. So what I'd like to do is tell the story just by itself, and then we're going to look at three keys within it. The story is a man by the name of David. The story is in 2 Samuel. David is a man who has made a lot of mistakes. He's simultaneously known as a man after God's own heart and a man who just botches a lot of things, including his relationships. Our story begins, he has decided to go outside of God's roadmap and marry not one woman, as God thought would be a good idea, Not two, but three, and a whole host of concubines. So he has a blended family, in the worst possible sense of the word. Well, because of that, he has lots of sons and stepsons, and he has sons and stepdaughters. And because of a lot of the mistakes and just lack of engagement in his kids' lives, he has teenagers, he has preteens, he has some 20-somethings, and he's just not really engaged in their lives at all. He's caught up in a lot of the mistakes he's made and trying to untangle that from the kingdom. Little does he know that his one son, Amnon, is in lust with his stepsister, David's daughter, Tamar. Well, David's completely unaware of this. He's also very easily manipulated. So Amnon one day comes up and says, "Oh, could you send word to my dad that I'm sick? Dad, I'm sick. I can't go to school. I'm just feeling so bad. I can't go in." Dad, "Oh, man, sorry to hear about that. What do you need?" He says, "You know what I need? If you could just have Tamar, she's a good cook. Could you have her come to my room, bake me some food and come bring it to me? I feel so ill." And again, he's just so unaware of what's going on between his one son from one marriage and daughter from the other, that he says that. He says to Tamar, he says, "I want you to cook some food and go over there and deliver it to Amnon." So she does. She cooks the food. She heads over. Amnon turns to the servants that were in his quarters with him and says, "I want you guys to leave us alone." See the problem beginning. She then comes over and gives him some food. We find out he's not sick at all. He begins to force himself and eventually has incest with his sister, who's crying out, "Please don't, please don't, please don't do this." The moment he's done with her, he hates her, it says. He goes from being in lust with her to hating her, and he says, "Get that woman out of here." She's crushed. She goes into the hallway. She's weeping. She wanders down through the hallway in tears. Her big brother Absalom finds her, her real brother, and he says, "What happened?" And she told him what happened. And he gives some of the worst advice in the Bible, advice that many of us got from people in our lives. "Don't tell anybody about this. Let's keep this to ourselves and keep it quiet." And Absalom and Tamar are waiting for their dad to engage. Their dad hears about what happened, and their dad is angry. He never has one conversation with Amnon. He never has one conversation with Tamar. Absalom is furious. He's furious that his dad hasn't engaged. He's furious that no one has come and fought for his sister. And even though his dad is mad, his dad is not involved. So for the next 2 years, Absalom, whose sister was attacked, will not speak to his stepbrother Amnon. 2 years they don't talk. 2 years. And David is so disconnected, he doesn't realize they haven't talked for 2 years. 2 years go by, and David assumes, as many of us do, that time heals all wounds, even if we don't engage or say anything or talk about it. So one day, Absalom comes to him and says, "Hey, I'm throwing a party, a graduation party. And I'd like all the brothers to come to it." And David hees and haws and says, "I don't know. I don't want to think everybody should go. It's a long way off, and this is your celebration. You enjoy your own graduation." He says, "Well, if everybody can't come, at least make sure Amnon is there." Bring, bring. The clue phone is ringing. But David doesn't catch the plot. He's so disengaged, he doesn't get it. He says, "All right." So he sends Amnon. "Amnon, I'm having a little party. I want you to be there." So Amnon gets sent, just as Tamar was, right into a trap. They come to the party. Absalom had gotten many of his friends and servants drunk. As his brother, who he hates, Amnon, steps into the picture, he tells his servants to ambush him and kill him. And his brother is now dead. Absalom runs off. He'll be gone for 7 years. The news of Amnon's death comes to David, and David is crushed. His heart is crushed at the tragedy involved in his life. He's not only lost his son Amnon, he won't talk to his son. Absalom can't find him. He ran away, and here he is. And these circumstances will set up the next 20 chapters of the book that will set up a mutiny where Absalom begins to build an army that eventually overthrows David's kingdom and destroys relationships. And the ripple effect goes on and on for generations. What a pretty story. Isn't that a pretty story? Why does the Bible tell us this stuff? Oftentimes, the Bible will describe these stories to say a few things. One, life is filled with tough, challenging, embarrassing, sticky, hard moments. And often the Bible describes tragedies and mistakes that people make so that we can learn from their mistakes and say, okay, what did they do that made things worse that I could avoid? And that's exactly what the story is about today, because I believe that within this story are some really key principles that we can use 4,000 years later in our parenting. We're going to look at three keys. Three keys to avoid the mistakes and tragedies that David made. Key number one, here's these three pictures, is we're going to try and get a clue as parents. Number two, we're going to try and make a map. And three, we're going to try and pop the clutch. Three things that David didn't do. If David had got a clue, if he had made a map for himself and his kids, and if he had popped the clutch many times in the story, things would have been so different. So much pain and so much agony could have been avoided. Now, we're not going to pretend it's all rainbows and lollipops. Families have crises. Gary Sweeten will be with us next week and talking about that. We're not going to avoid all tragedy. We're not going to avoid our kids making mistakes. But there are some certain principles we put in play that will help in the process. We're going to try and avoid those mistakes by, again, getting a clue, making a map, and popping the clutch. Let's begin with get a clue. See, David was so unaware of what was going on in his kids' lives. He just didn't have a clue what they were feeling, what they were thinking. He had no idea that his son Amnon was in lust with his daughter Tamar. He didn't have a clue. He wasn't involved in their life. He hadn't created lifelines to their life to figure that out. So much so that here's what the passage says. David sent home to Tamar saying, "Now go to your brother Amnon's house and prepare food for him." Had he known? Had he talked to any of the other kids? Oh yeah, Amnon's got the hots for Tamar. They all knew. And the same thing with Amnon. 20 verses later. Absalom said, "If not, please let my brother Amnon go with me." And the king said to him, "Why should he go with you?" He had enough gumption to at least ask one question. But Absalom urged him. You ever had that? You're just tired of fighting with your kids? And they just urge you. They wear you out. They wear you down. They urged you. And you go, it's just not worth the fight. So he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. You know, parenting is tough, and I have preteens, I don't have teenagers, and I won't pretend to be, you know, Mr. Expert on this. We had a small group recently at Horizon about 6 months ago. We brought in a woman who specialized in not only teaching teenagers and parents certain skills to cope, but she also taught on abstinence. How do you talk abstinence and have talks on tough topics with your kids? Kathy St. John came in, and we had several couples at the church who went to that, and they shared how beneficial it was to hear and learn some of these important principles. And she talked about some of the ways that we as parents can get a clue. She said, she mentioned several things. I'll just put a list of them here. She talked about checking the lyrics of the songs that your kids listen to. She talked about a website, www.letssingit.com. We use that a lot for the songs that we pick out here. She talked about parental controls on our cable box, whether or not we should have movie channels fully available to our teenagers. The temptation is just so strong. Talked about Facebook. About 9 months ago, I decided to get on Facebook. I was very hostile to Facebook. What a waste of time. But I thought, my daughter's going to be asking, so I need to figure it out. I got to get engaged. And as parents, we can no longer say to ourselves, well, I just don't get that technology. It's no longer an accessory to parenting. We got to figure it out. We got to learn new skills about technology. And we have to put certain parameters in place at which to get a clue. To tell our kids, if you're going to have a Facebook page, you have to befriend mom and dad, because we want to see what other kids are writing on your Facebook page. Which means we have to check ours to figure out what's going on. And again, this takes time and it takes energy. To ask our kids, I want the passwords for your computer. Yes, I can get on there. To get computer software that sweeps and tells us what websites they're looking at, protects them from certain websites. But it doesn't matter how protective we are, there's going to be pornography and junk that comes up. And to know what's going on with our kids' life, and to create a relationship where we can talk about these issues together. You know, a lot of us think, well, that just sounds like spying. You know, if a doctor did an x-ray and found out you had a lump and didn't check on it regularly, you'd say, well, that's malpractice. He just checked once and said, I hope it goes well. He's spying on me. He keeps asking me to keep checking on this. But part of getting a clue is, as parents, figuring out, I got to find increasingly different ways to get in my kids' life. And it changes. Your kids may be involved in a certain sport. Well, how do I get involved in their life that way? Kids may be involved in computers. You may hate computers. Well, how do I get involved in that? How do I find ways to get a clue and get involved in my kid's life? And it's not easy. One of the reasons at Horizon we have small groups is because we need help. We need other parents at times to just listen. Other moms, if you're in a women's group here, just to hear how your heart is crushed because your son or daughter is making a decision you wouldn't make. Or some other parent to say, you know, we tried this and this might work. No, we tried that, didn't work. We need that dialogue together. Getting a clue is not easy. And if you have teenagers, you know how hard it is. I can barely get a one-word answer out of them, let alone get a clue. So we need each other as a community to help figure this out together. Again, that's one of the reasons that we do small groups, is to help us in that. I had a conversation recently with a parent who was talking about her 20-year-old son, and her 20-year-old son has just off the deep end, lots and lots of mistakes, and she's just talking to me, her and her husband, who had both made some significant decisions in their spiritual pilgrimage several years ago through some conversations we had, and they're just on the phone, she's weeping. Ah, just my heart is broken over what he's doing and what he's done. And I said, even though he's off the deep end, and even though he's outside of your house now, keep a connection. Get good at texting. Just text, I'm thinking of you. Send an email. Write a letter. You want to keep a relational lifeline so when he comes to his senses, there'll be a relational lifeline to say, thanks for keeping in touch with me. Even when our kids are in rebellion, even when our kids are grown and way out of way, let's be the initiator to say, hey, I was thinking of you. Hey, I just want to let you know what's going on in my life. Even if they don't write back, we need to take the ownership, because when they come to their senses, and most of them will, we want to have created the lines and the contact points where they can come to us. Amnon, Tamar, Absalom, none of them felt like they had a relational lifeline. None of them felt like their dad was involved or even interested in their life in such a way to come and connect with them. And our kids face temptations and challenges different from when you were a kid, different from when I was a kid. And they need us not only to get a clue, but to make a map. To help them understand what to do in that circumstance. What do you do when your friend's talking about suicide? What do you do when your friend's cutting? What do you do when your friends have eating disorders? What do you do when all your friends are bringing their iPod and they've got pictures on it? We need to help our kids have a map and not assume they're going to figure it out. That's the second thing we see, is not just get a clue, but to make a map. Make a map for the parental guidelines that are going to be part of us leading ourselves and leading our family. Now, what is that map? I want to give you four aspects to that map that we see directly in the story of David. Four aspects to the map. We'll look at each one individually. We'll start with don't be alone. Don't be alone. Tamar was raped because she let herself be alone. Amnon took advantage of her because the king and the rules of the house allowed him to send the servants out and for them to be alone. And I bet you David would just say, if I could go back, I would have said, it's just smart. I would have talked to my daughter. It's just smart. When your spidey sense goes off and somebody says that they want to be alone with you, we want to help develop our conscience or the spidey sense of our kids to say, warning, warning. Don't be alone. Be careful here. I was talking with some parents who have a daughter who's in her 20s. And she says she's a Christ follower, and she says she wants to wait until she's married to have sex. And she's telling me about a conversation they had. Like, you're talking to a 20-year-old. Yeah, it's always been a topic. Well, how'd that go? Really good. We said, well, what are you doing in this boyfriend that you're very serious about to protect your innocence and protect your purity? What maps, what guidelines do you guys have in place? And they had a very frank conversation. Well, we try and never lay down when we're kissing. That's a good one. Even at our house, you know, you can't be alone in a room with the door shut. Just simple rules that will be fought against, but you have the experience of time to say, it's not wise, it's not smart, and the danger you set yourself up from is far worse than the freedom you think you're gaining. It's a good map. Don't be alone. We had a small group last year for moms and dads trying to figure out, how do you talk to your kids about the birds and the bees? How do you talk about all these issues? So several moms went through the group. And then about two-thirds of the way through the group, they said, well, maybe the guys should do a session. And so the guys came in for a session. Many of you were in that session, just said how helpful it was. Because you're saying, well, Chad, I hear you saying I should talk about how do you do it? Well, I found a few books that were very, very helpful in me creating a map for myself to have those conversations with my kids. We have some of those for sale. You can get them on Amazon or wherever. But here's a couple. Preparing Your Daughter for Every Woman's Battle. I read through the book. The first half is for the parents, and then a second half you read with your daughter. It's pretty much aimed at preteens. We'll get to teenagers in just a second. But I found that really helpful to talk about my daughter before those temptations came. We started in fifth grade. And it talks of things like bullying, gossip, eating disorders. It gets into the details of sexuality, what that's like, what that means. And it teaches it. And it allows it not just to be a one-time talk that feels awkward, an ongoing topic. We took 6 months, two or three times a week. Hey, let's just sit down on the bed and let's just talk about chapter one. We read it together and we just talked about it. Because often it's hard to know, how do you talk about it? So you can say, hey, Chad's making me do this. So just start there. Take all the animosity and say, you know, I'd like to do, I'd like us to go to, you know, breakfast in the morning, or, you know, right before you go to bed, I'm just going to come sit, I want us to go through a book together and just talk about some stuff. And this helps create a map for you to be able to have the conversations. And the one for boys is called Preparing Your Son for Every Man's Battle. They're aimed at probably preteen to 10th grade, probably junior high to 10th grade. And it really gets into some very detailed mapping. Now, the other book I'm taking my daughter through right now is aimed more at high school students. In fact, Amy, who was up here earlier, took our teenage girls through this a couple years ago. And the same book I've been recommending in this series, which talks about how men think and how women think, they came up with two books called How Young Men Think and How Young Women Think. Now, this is sort of a chance to say, I found a book that will help explain boys. I'd like us to go through it together. Oh, yeah, okay, but it'll be worth it. I found a book, and these books are called For Young Men Only, Explaining How Women Think. A lot of the stuff we talked about the first 2 weeks of this series, only how it applies to teenage girls. And For Young Women Only, which explains how men think. My daughter, it's a little over my daughter's head in that she's not in high school yet, but it's been so helpful to help her hear from a guy and a man and a dad how men think. And how that applies to how she dresses and how she acts and how she thinks. So, again, we're just trying to be real practical, that these can be tools that will help you map for yourself and for your own kids. So one, don't be alone. Give yourself the kids a map. Don't be alone. Number two, our kids need to know there are times to don't be polite. That may sound horrible. What do I mean by that? Tamar can see where this conversation is going with Amnon. And she says, stop it. This is wrong. This is bad. No, my brother. Don't force me. There's no such thing should be done in Israel. Don't do this disgraceful thing. Our kids need to know there's a time to just run. There's a time to get away. There's a time to say, spidey sense is going off. I got to get out of here. There's a time to not be polite. I saw with Gary Sweden. He had a dad in his office who was saying, boy, my daughter is so strong-willed. I need to break her will. I need to break her will. He says, you don't want to break your daughter's will. You want your daughter to have conviction and have strong will. So then there's a boy in the back seat or on the couch who's trying to push her far than she wants to go. You want her to have a strong will, to do the right thing, to have convictions. So don't break her will. Steer her will toward what is right. Coach her will toward goodness. But our kids need to know there's times to not be polite. I had one parent said that they had a code word with their teenagers that said, if you're ever in trouble and you're embarrassed and you think, if you're going to call me, I'm going to kill you. Okay? When you're having that thought, you can call me and just say, when is grandmother getting there tomorrow? When's grandma coming tomorrow? That'll be our code word. If there's drugs at a party, if there's drinking at a party, if you're in danger, and the person is going to drive you home and there's no way to get out of it, just call me and say, hey, I was just wondering what time I need to be home. What time is grandma getting here tomorrow? That was their code word. And the dad and the mom said, "We will, no questions asked. We will come and pick you up. We would rather have no questions asked than you to put yourself in a dangerous circumstance. And you're trying to be polite to your friends. There's times to not be polite and just run from danger. Number three, don't part of our map, don't see women as objects. You could do an entire psychological study on these two verses. Here's this boy who thinks and objectifies women. He's in lust with his sister. He's in lust with the idea of being in love with his sister. And look what happens the minute he attacks her. He forced her and lay with her, and then he hated her exceedingly. So that the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love, and actually the Hebrew word lust, with which he loved her. And Amnon said to her, get out of here. Arise, be gone. He called his servant who attended him, the one he'd sent out of the room, and said, here, put, doesn't even call her by her name. Look at that. Put this woman out away from me and bolt the door behind her. There is temptation all over the place for men. And there are temptations all over the place for boys. And to say, don't look at pornography is a good start. But then what do they do? We need to help them map what happens when you do. When they do, can they come talk to us about that? Now, that's a weird conversation to have. But how do we create an environment to say, Dad, did it again? Well, you know, let me help you out, son. Let's confess that. Let's see what else we can do. Let's not have computers in your room. It's one of our rules. We're just not going to have computers in rooms. It's just too big of a temptation. In fact, there's a recent parenting talk that said, don't even let your kids charge their cell phones in their rooms alone. Why? Because they get cyberbullied all night. People texting back and forth and keeping track of the whole gossip circle. Give our kids some freedom to relax. That may seem like a dumb rule to them. Can't charge my phone. But you know, you're actually helping them be more free. They don't have to deal with that. But I think this is so key. Don't see women as objects. Our young men are living in a culture that has objectified women in such horrendous ways. And I get to talk to the men in their 20s and 30s where pornography that they thought was setting them up for marriage is destroying their sex life. I talk to couples who are in their 20s and 30s and objectifying women for so many years has become a pet sin or a pet project or a pet habit, and has become destructive, and it gets more and more destructive. And we have got to be the ones to engage and have awkward conversations now to set a map for them to how to view men and women as equals with inherent dignity, not as people we objectify. In fact, the same phrase, get that woman out of here, is the same phrase his dad had used to get his third wife. He saw Bathsheba, who was already married, bathing on a nearby rooftop, and he said, get that woman for me. So oftentimes it means we got to come back and say, well, I need to wrestle with some of the stuff in my own life. You need to pretend with your kids that you don't. Son, I struggle with this, and here's some things I try and do to stay pure. Let's walk this journey together. Kids hunger for honesty, and they hunger for people to just be honest with them, especially parents. Don't see women as objects. Don't, and this is so key, don't keep quiet about hurts. If you're being bullied, if you're being manipulated, if you're being pressured, if somebody has done something to you or threatened to do something to you, we need our kids to know, don't keep quiet about that. Dad will trust you. Mom will trust you. Come talk to us about that. Some of the most festering hurts I've talked to people 20, 30 years later that happened from a leader, that happened from a pastor, that happened from an uncle, are because somewhere along the way, they learned the map is you don't talk about it. We need to map it and say, you do, don't keep quiet about those hurts. Yes, it was terrible, it was shameful, and we're going to fight for you. We believe in you, little girl. We believe in you, son. We're going to fight for you in this. Look what happens in the next verse. Absalom says to her, has Amnon, your brother, been with you? But now hold your peace, my sister. After all, he's your brother. Do not take this thing to heart. Excuse me? Don't let this get to you. So Tamar remained desolate, desolate in her brother's house. Time does not heal wounds. It just covers them up. And we've got to create environments in our household where we can deal with the tough, icky stuff that happens. Something to prevent putting in circumstance where it does happen. And then when things do happen, we're going to talk about it. We're going to work through this together. I told you we could avoid the tragedy in David's life by doing three things. We wanted to make this map. And then we want to move to the third piece, which is pop the clutch. Engage. If only David had engaged anywhere in the story, if he had addressed the bad behaviors, it was his inaction. It was parental malpractice all through his life. 2 years of them not talking. Engage, David. Pop the clutch. You've got it in idle. You got lots of fumes coming out the back. Look how angry I am. But you haven't engaged the gear. Our kids can't see our heart. They can only see our calendar. They can only see our schedule. They can only see what we do. And what Tamar and Amnon and Absalom saw was a dad who didn't care. He didn't care enough to do the right thing. He didn't care enough to have the awkward conversation. He didn't care enough to bring about justice. Two things we can do to pop the clutch. Number one, three things rather. Engage bad behavior quickly. Quickly. As soon as you see, a comment that just moves from your son or daughter disagreeing with you to them being disrespectful, say, hey, before you go, let's talk for a second. Listen, it's okay to disagree with me. Again, map out how to disagree with you. Here's how to disagree with Dad and still be respectful. You can disagree with me, but you can't use that tone. Hey, come here for a second before you guys go. I don't want to ever hear you talk to your mom that way. That's okay to disagree with Mom and Dad. Well, that works. Let's watch.
I said, King, you're going to be king.
You're going to be king.
Yeah, right.
Where do you think you're going?
Far, far away. From you.
You get back here, young man, and I mean it.
Hey, whoa, Shrek. Then you're going to have to change your tactics if you want to get anywhere with this kid.
You're right, Donkey. What about this?
Shrek!
Oh, come on, it's just a joke. Still.
Maybe it explains your teenage years. Maybe it explains your college years. But they found the parents who put high structure in place and had high relational closeness with their kids that combined the two.